Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to another broadcast of the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast. Today, my guest is Joshua Shea, and he has a message that is going to apply to so many people listening today, pastors and ministry leaders, as well as the average Joe or Jane listening in. Let me tell you a little bit about Joshua, and you'll immediately pick up on today's theme. Joshua Shea seemingly had it all. He had a loving wife, two children, a supportive extended family. In 2010, after nearly 15 years working his way up the journalism ladder, he launched a lifestyle magazine in his hometown. And within a year of that, he was one of the founders of Central Maine's largest film festival and had won a seat on the city council in Auburn, Maine. Accolades including receiving the keys to the city and being called one of the next 10 people shaping Maine's economy by a state newspaper followed. While the public got one picture of Josh, behind closed doors, his longtime mental health and addiction issues were festering. A workaholic by nature, he actively ignored the red flags that surrounded his long-existing pornography and alcohol problems. Finding it easier to lose himself in a bottle of tequila and adult websites, his relationships with his family, his colleagues, and his friends grew distant. His business ventures began to collapse. Then, life as he knew it came to a screeching halt when he was arrested on a charge of relating to encouraging a teenager to disrobe in a chat room in 2014. He was convicted and served 6 months in jail in early 2016. And following his arrest, he sought help and treatment through intense one-on-one therapy, group therapy, and at inpatient rehab facilities as well. Bothered at the lack of quality resources and open discussion around the topic of pornography addiction, Joshua is now sharing with the public his experience in his book titled, The Addiction Nobody Will Talk About, How I Let My Pornography Addiction Hurt People and Destroy Relationships. He hopes he can educate non-addicts that porn addiction can happen to anyone and help people who make or may have an addiction not to head down the same road that he did. Along with writing the book, Joshua speaks to groups and is sought after as a pornography addiction expert by numerous media outlets across America. Now, Joshua, this sounds rather facetious, but I want to welcome you to our show today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, I believe that you have a message that is timely in this day and hour and that needs to be heard. And my first question, Joshua, I always ask this one first, so we'll just start with it. Other than that brief bio, tell us in your own words, who is Joshua Shea?
Joshua Shea is a guy who is just starting to figure out who he truly is. But what he's finding is at the core, there's a lot of good there, and there's a desire to do a lot of good in the world once you detangle all the static that came before this moment.
Okay. Now, I mean, your bio sounds like you said you were living the life. I mean, you're living the dream. What happened? How did all of this start?
Well, you know, I thought I was put on this earth to be a writer and a magazine editor. I thought I was put on this earth to just be adored by as many people as I possibly could. And I think that I came to that conclusion through some very faulty survival skills and coping mechanisms that I developed when I was young because of some abuse that took place at the hands of a caregiver. No excuse for the way I turned out that way, but I think that I developed some of my coping mechanisms that way, and among them was to try to seek out everybody's approval and attention. I also tried to be an overachiever, as you know, the bio you gave of me kind of indicates. I did these things because I was running from who I really was. And when I was just on my own, nobody there to tell me how good I was, or nobody to tell me, thank you for putting on a film festival, or here's a concern I have with the city. When it was just me at the core, there was a fear of who I really was. So I escaped. I escaped with pornography. I escaped with alcohol. At the end of the day, you know, midnight, 1 a.m., when the wife and kids had gone to bed, for nearly 20 years, I was looking at pornography, and I was drinking pretty hard and doing a darn good job hiding it from everybody so I could go out the next day and play the character of who everybody thought I was. But deep down, I was hurting.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. I have to admit that, you know, I haven't been, you know, up in the accolades and all that stuff like that, but I was in the military and, you know, living the life of being, you know, the great leader, you know, of everything going on. I was a drill instructor and all that, and alcoholism got a hold of me. My father was an alcoholic. He'd been in jail half my life, in and out all the time, married four times. My mother died when I was 18 months old, but so I was bounced back and forth between my grandparents and him, and I swore up and down I was never going to drink, I was never going to go to jail, and I was only going to be married one time, and that's it. And one night, I found myself in jail on the verge of a divorce, well, drunk in jail and on the verge of a divorce.
And, that's a hat trick.
Yeah, and I mean, and even that didn't really serve as a wake-up call. It was probably another 8 years before it all started, you know, being revealed, I guess you could say, that of what was going on in my life, and I started making the changes. But I can relate a little bit to what you were talking about, trying to hide, you know, your persona in public is one thing, and then when you're at home, it's different.
Absolutely, I can relate to that 100%. And it's tough to do. It's tough to keep going and keep going and keep going.
Yeah, and that just facilitates more alcohol, you know, because you're trying to drown the pain, and you know, you're not happy with who you really are, and lifting up that persona, that takes a lot of energy.
Well, and like really you, like you also read, what happened with my persona was I started actually taking a little bit of a public hit because my magazine plateaued, and instead of putting out, you know, 120 page issues, we were now putting out 80 pages and 70 pages, and the company was starting to fail. Yeah. And you know, that's one of those things where when things are going very well with a lot of money's flowing through the door, you can hide the fact you're not that good a businessman. But yeah, when money starts getting tight, you can't hide it. I think the biggest mistake that led to my ultimate downfall with the police, you know, showing up at my door a year and a half later, was that in early 2013, I made the decision to pull myself off of medication I took for bipolar disorder. Mm. And I've been taking that medication for 10 years, kept me nice and even. And when I saw that my company was starting to fail, I said, you know, I could get a few extra hours every day. I could tap back into that energy that I remember having before I went on these meds and the creativity I had before I went on these meds. And what happened was, pulling myself off of those drugs, I found myself using pornography and alcohol at levels that I never had before. That was when I reached the real critical point of the addiction, was when I made the horrible mistake to not take care of my mental health.
Yeah. Amen. Now, I've read reports that there are so many people considered to be closet addicts concerning pornography, and the number of closet addicts who are pastors or in ministry is astounding. Do you have any numbers in that area?
Yeah, there were a couple different groups that put out numbers. I generally trust the Barna group. They do a lot with the church, but they also do a lot outside the church. They have they're an independent organization. They don't present statistics and then say, and now buy our, you know, right, products. So I really trust them. What they have is their statistics from 2 years ago, which was their most recent porn study, said that 57% of pastors and 64% of youth pastors have admitted that they've struggled with porn in the past, mm-hmm, and that 21% of the youth pastors are still using every day. 14% of the regular pastors are using every day. And of those who are using every day, about half feel that they are addicted. Almost all of them express a great sense of shame with it. And about half of the pastors who look every day say that they live in constant fear of being discovered. And that's probably because of the churchgoers who are surveyed, 42% of adults think that a pastor who looks at pornography should be kicked out and should be asked to resign. Younger Christians tend to be a little bit more tolerant towards it. So this is not just a matter of people finding out about a secret lifestyle or a secret, you know, hobby or a secret illness. This is also about, you know, losing your job, losing your lifestyle, losing your livelihood. And that's really what addiction is. As you know, it's knowing that you're doing something that is wrong, knowing that you're doing something that will have harmful effects, but still not be able to take care of it. I have a feeling that those numbers of addiction are actually a lot higher. These are people who self-reported.
Right, right. And I've read that even women are porn addicts, a lower number than men, but shocking nonetheless. Have you counseled many women in this area, or do you have statistics on that?
Yeah, I actually have. I do run a side business right now, in addition to my writing, where I do counsel porn addicts, both men and women, and I do speak with two women right now. And I also deal a lot with the wives, girlfriends, mothers, fathers of porn addicts, and help them walk through the beginning stages and get them to a place where I can hand them off to a true professional who can deal with them. But yeah, women are actually the highest growing percentage of porn addicts right now.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's also interesting is that women are more likely to take their porn addiction outside of the computer or outside of the TV screen. 80% of women who define themselves as addicts have said they either have or have strongly thought about acting beyond the porn addiction. And that's regardless of if they're married, not married, in a relationship, whatever. They more than men, take it to the next level. And with women under the age of 30, which really sees a big cutoff with porn statistics of men and women under 30 and men and women over 30. Because if you think about it, people who are 30 years old, they are right at that age where they do not remember a world before the internet.
Right.
They grew up on the internet. They didn't have to go get videotapes from the back part of the store, or they didn't have to go and get a dirty magazine that was wrapped in plastic. They've been able to get their porn by just clicking on it. So the numbers, it's quite disturbing, the numbers of men and women under 30 who are addicted to pornography. Then you've got that 30 to about 60, 65-year-old group who have learned how to use the internet and it's been introduced to their lives. That number of addicts is lower. And then when you go over 60, 65, the numbers really fall off because those people just never really have adapted to the internet and made it a part of their lives for the most part. So there's a direct correlation with the internet. Right now, across all across all ethnicities, education level, income level, 34% of men under 30 years old say that they believe they have a problem with pornography online. Think about that. 34% of all men. That's one out of three men you see on the street under 30 years old. Now, if we don't take care of that in the next 10 years, that means it's going to be one out of three males under 40. Although, if you look at the way the statistics have changed, within 20 years, it's going to be closer to half the men under 50 are addicted to porn. Now, we ignored the opiate crisis in this country for a whole bunch of different reasons. This is a crisis that we can see coming right now. The numbers are there. While the psychologists are finally just coming around to the fact this is actually a real addiction, it's the economists and the statisticians who have laid out just how bad this is going to be. And if we don't take care of this, you tell me what it looks like in, you know, 2050, when half the men in this country are addicted to pornography, if we don't do anything. That's going to make every other healthcare crisis look like nothing in comparison.
Yeah, and that's not even counting the women.
No, it's not, because at that point, you've got half the men are going to be addicted to pornography, and about 30% of the women are.
Yeah, wow.
Imagine that. You put 20 men and women into a room, and you're only going to have 8 of them who aren't addicted to pornography. That's crazy.
Yeah.
We've got to do something about this.
Many I talk with believe that the USA is the leading cause of the pornography addiction in the world, mainly because of Hollywood and, you know, the liberal theology that promotes these things, things that God clearly states that he abhors. What have you heard concerning that area, that the U.S. is the leading cause of it?
Well, I mean, that's an opinion. Technically, there's actually far more pornography being made in Russia.
Really?
There's far, and you want something to really blow your mind. As far as underage pornography goes, more than 90% of it is made by the kids themselves and trading it amongst themselves. I think that it's a little dangerous to inject politics or that kind of thing into this issue, because then you start finger pointing. When the fact is that, you know, I have met every type of person who is an addict, you know, rich, poor, fat, thin, young, old, black, white. There is no stereotypical addict. And I've met plenty of Democrats and I've met plenty of Republicans. Everybody feels the same shame. So I caution about making it a discussion at all about morality, because that's when people start to feel shame. And people are only going to step forward and start talking about this. And I'm not even talking about necessarily as an addiction. We need to talk about the fact that 80% of people under 40 years old just look at porn in general. People are only going to talk about this if they, number one, don't feel judged, and if they, number two, feel safe. And if we can create safe, judgment-free conversations, we can start getting at the core of it. And ultimately, I don't care who you vote for. I just want you to have the education when it comes to what this could possibly do to you, because it's like drugs, it's like alcohol, it's like gambling, it's like food addiction. You know, pornography addiction is an addiction, and it's an insidious one.
Mm-hmm. And with just about every other addiction, the high that you're looking for never is satisfied. You always want to go one step more, one step more, one step more.
And that's the science of addiction. You flood the dopamine receptors in your mind. You know, what once did it for you, as an alcoholic, once it was a certain amount number of beers, then you couldn't drink enough beer, so you had to move over to wine. Then you couldn't drink enough wine, so you had to move over to the hard stuff. Then that didn't do it, so you had to move to the really nasty hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that you just keep chasing this high that your brain science, as you're rotting your brain. Essentially what happens in addiction is the same thing as that happens in diseases like Alzheimer's or dementia. You start to rot your brain away. You start to fry your brain. And when people say that, addiction isn't a disease, which is quickly, changing, thankfully, it's just look at a healthy brain and look at an addicted brain, and you'll see a diseased brain right there.
Yeah. How did this situation that you were in with being arrested and everything, how did that affect your family?
It was obviously a very rough time, but I think it ultimately brought us closer together. When I was arrested, I was only in jail. Nobody was at the house at the time, thankfully. My son went off to school just as the police showed up, and we gave them a cover story. They were actually very good about it with me. My wife got me out of jail a few minutes after I was there, and we came back to my house, and there was already TV news vans there.
Wow.
And that day, we had to dodge TV news vans several times. One time, we were actually at home. They showed up. We ran from our living room to my bedroom and flipped on the TV. And I got to tell you, it is surreal when you're watching TV in your bedroom, and you can see on TV your dog in your living room barking at the TV people on your front lawn.
Wow.
It's one of those things where you just stand there going, I wouldn't believe this if this was a movie. And my wife wanted to know one thing right up front when she picked me up. I said, you can divorce me. No questions asked. Take whatever you want. I understand, because you just don't put your wife in this position.
Yeah.
And she's just looked at me and said, I want to make sure that this isn't involving little kids. And I said, no, absolutely not. This was a teenage girl who looked like an adult. I was so sick in my head at the time that I let it happen. And I don't make any excuses, because I was the one who decided to pull myself off of my mental health medication. Mm-hmm. I knew that I needed to take care of my mental health. I didn't. And this was the result. While I may not have been making fully cognizant decisions at the time, I did make the decision to not take the pills. So I try never to minimize. I try never to justify. I did 6 months in jail. I deserve to do 6 months in jail. And I think that I came out of it a much better person, a much healthier person. Had those police officers not showed up at my door in March 2014, I tell you, I only give even odds that I'd be here talking to you today.
Yeah, yeah. What are some red flags or warning signs to be on the watch for, not just in others, but let's start in our personal life?
Well, take a look at, if you look at pornography, the first thing that's kind of important to say is that this does not mean that you are a raging addict. There are people who can drink like a normal person. There are people who can go and gamble like normal people. We can talk about the morality of you looking at porn, but just because you use it doesn't mean that you're an addict. So just know that. But early warning signs, are you lying about looking at your pornography? Are you keeping secrets about it? Are you covering up the nature and the extent of it? If somebody confronts you about using porn, do you get angry and irritable? And then in your real life, are you starting to see certain sexual dysfunction, like erectile dysfunction or an inability to finish? Those are some of the really early warning signs that only you will notice if you're an addict. Some of the ongoing signs where people start to notice things happening are escalating amounts of time that spent on your porn use. Sometimes you lose hours at a time. You start to actually develop an inability to form lasting social and intimate romantic relationships. You start to see feelings of shame, depression, isolation, and you start to lose interest in non-porn activities, whether it be work, school, family, exercise, socializing. And then at the very end, where it reaches a tipping point, you reach what's called the critical phase of addiction. That's viewing more intense or bizarre content, escalation from just two-dimensional viewing to taking it outside the computer, or in my case, I moved on to chat rooms so I could interact. You actually start having trouble at work or school related to poor performance. Maybe you're even misusing the company computers or school computers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, at the very end of it, you've got your financial issues where you can end up ruined, and you get your legal issues where you can end up ruined. By that point, you should just have red flags popping up all over the place.
What are some of the warning signs that can be observed in others, spouses, friends, pastors?
Look for detachment and people being secretive about what they're using a computer for. Again, it's like if a lot of it is in that ongoing signs. Are the people who you love spending more time on the computer but hiding what they're trying to do? Are they fumbling with excuses for what they're trying to do? Do they seem to isolate a lot more than usual? Do they seem, if you're their romantic partner, do they seem to be losing interest in that way? And important to say, losing interest does not mean they're losing interest in you. It means they're losing interest in general. A lot of women who have men that turn to porn often feel like they're the problem, and they are not the problem at all. And just look for those disintegrating relationships. The person doesn't want to talk. The person, wants to be with their computer alone when they're with you doing another activity, maybe out to dinner, out to a movie. They're preoccupied in their mind because they want to be back in that one place where they have control, where they feel like they can escape, where they can visit their own little world that is so much better than the real world.
Yeah, that's scary. Wow. What other statistics can you share with us?
Oh God, I could share a million statistics. How many hours do you have? I guess some of my favorites, or the most telling, across America right now, 18% of men have self-diagnosed themselves in all age groups. So you're looking at 1 out of 5 men who thinks they're addicted to pornography, or roughly about 22, 23 million. The Bureau of Labor several years back did a study to see how much lost time was at work. And they actually did this study in connection with March Madness basketball pools. But what they found was 28% of people admitted to using a pornographic site on a computer in the previous month at work. So that means 37 million people in America had actually utilized their work computer to look at pornography, which that blows my mind because I wasn't even part of that group.
Hey folks, Pastor Bob here. We're all out of time on today's episode. I hope you're getting a lot of information about the pornography addiction in this country and around the world for that matter from Joshua Shea. I mean, he had it all. He was an up-and-coming star. He had the job, the money, the house, the kids, the family, and he lost it all and went to prison because of pornography. And it would be so... I could probably bring hundreds of people on this program to share a similar testimony, but I wanted you to hear his testimony because many people think of it as just as something that happens to bums and, you know, alcoholics and, you know, it never happened to me. Well, he never thought it would happen to him, but it's that subtle of an addiction. It is an addiction. The devil is so slick in what he does. You have to be careful on these things. We're going to come back tomorrow and finish this interview with Joshua Shea. Be sure to come back, share this interview, put this on your Facebook media, and share it with your friends and family because this needs to get out. The word of this needs to get out. It's that serious of an epidemic. It can destroy families, careers, as you see with Joshua. So come back tomorrow as we finish this interview. Till then, be blessed in all that you do. Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this. Your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a Faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.